Super Tuesday. Let your voice be heard. Then listen for the updates, recap, and analysis. FM Talk has enlisted the assistance of the best political pundits in Alabama to unwrap the results of your votes locally. The AL1 congressional race. Will there be a runoff for the U.S. Senate seat? Sean Sullivan and Jeff Poore host election night coverage presented by the Craig Smith Agency with new lower auto insurance rates beginning when the polls close at 7 on FM Talk. FM Talk 106.5.
I'm Judge Don Davis, Chief Election Officer of Mobile County, and I'm here to remind everyone that we have an election coming up. Mobile County's voting system has features which enhance the ability of persons with disabilities and persons who cannot read and write to participate in the election process. Remember, a voter can always make changes to a ballot or ask an election official for assistance before casting the ballot. So get out and vote. Remember, every vote counts.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
Okay, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this beautiful Friday. Live local talk over the next hour. And I love this because the subject I was talking about at the beginning of last hour that had left me scratching my head some when I was doing kind of one of the things I do as I do my kind of normal habitual things before the show starts. I check the markets and look, and we know we've been talking about the downturn in the stock market. We've been looking at that, and obviously oil prices deflated as well. But when that happens, precious metals have, at least in my experience, always gone up. So when I saw gold down at the same time oil was down, same time the markets were down, I started scratching my head, and I know that I got a guy that does this every day and looks into it every day. That's my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and joining us now, and maybe help me understand this more, Angelo.
I'm not sure if you're saying that I study this every day or I scratch my head about this every day, but today, either one is absolutely correct, man. Yeah, because usually people get out of the markets and they dive into commodities, precious metals in particular, or the reverse happens. And, you know, over the last few weeks, a lot of things have been going on. And now I know one of the things that happened was the consumer price index came out, the inflation numbers, the doom and gloom numbers they were talking about happening didn't happen. It was actually exactly the opposite. And I think something happened as well, and we've seen this in the past, you know, gold and silver were at a price point where they're within the percentage for a lot of those bots that buy and sell stocks and commodities and things. I think a lot of those bots triggered when gold and silver hit those peaks a few days ago. And I think that created a huge sell-off, dropped everything down. And, of course, with news nowadays, as soon as something happens, then everybody else panics and follows suit.
And so, well, it's just one of these things I look at that it stands out because it's strange. And it would seem that the, you know, you wonder a bot, who knows, you know, the algorithm that builds the bot and what they do. But it seems like it should be buying and not selling. But, you know, people saying that something, a little similar thing happened back in 08, but then the precious metals bounced right back up and regained everything they lost and gained more. So I don't know. I mean, I'm a rank amateur at this.
Well, and I'm sort of expecting the same thing to happen right now, because if you really truly do look at the big picture, between the scares that are going on, and I really do believe a lot of this is just a scare.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the problems with the coronavirus are not nearly as dramatic as the news is making it out to be, you know, as far as a lot of the mainstream media creating this pandemic word, some of these things they're throwing out there. But when things like this happen, people nowadays react instantaneously to it. So I think We had this big sell-off, a lot of stuff going on. People are panicking and selling. And in a week, I think we're going to be almost back to where we were. I don't think this is going to be a long-term drop.
All right, so let's talk about precious metals, and let's also talk about not just like picturing the bars of precious metal, but you'll have another wrinkle with this, because you can invest in precious metal at the same time you can collect artwork.
Well, one of the things I love to do is collect some of the cool stuff myself, and also get other people into it, because Sean, you know, you're a very, very logical guy. You like to think things through, and you understand the value of an ounce of silver or an ounce of gold, but you try to give that to some people, and they go, eh. You give them something cool, like a John Wick coin or a Darth Vader coin, and they love that stuff. And then that gets them thinking about the whole process of what makes something have value versus not, and whether you want to get those cool John Wick coins or you want to get that 100-ounce silver bar, we can help you with all of those things here at Mobile Bay Coins, and we're also going to help teach you about what all these things are and what has value and what doesn't.
It's great. Also remind folks, too, they can get free estimates if they have precious metal or jewelry or anything else like that in the home. Y'all give free estimates on those items.
Yes, sir. So if you've got a coin collection, jewelry collection, maybe some gold or silver bullion that somebody in the family passed down to you, or maybe it's yours and it's been sitting around a while, bring it by the shop. We will give you a current market estimate and let you know what your items are worth today.
All right, great stuff. Tell folks how to come find you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online at mobilebaycoins.com, on the radio, Two Guys and Some Change, every Tuesday night on FM Talk 106.5, or check us out on Facebook.
Love it, man. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Have a great weekend, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. I like it. I like to get somebody who deals with it every day, maybe help us understand these things out there as kind of watching the market too. I've said this, that I started off the show, there's a point where I think this is, for somebody like me, a good thing for investing, because it's going to bring things back into a range where I think maybe it's a deal. That doesn't mean every stock will be there. But if you look at things, you look at different companies and all that, did their business model fail because of coronavirus, right? And I think a lot of us, if you slow down and look at it, we'll go, well, no. They still do that thing. Whatever widget they make or whatever service they supply, it's still valid. So what's changed? Okay, we'll grab one here before I run to the break. Coming up, Representative Chip Brown's going to join us. We're going to talk more about Anaya's Law, a bill he sponsored, and its passing in Montgomery. But first, David is in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean, this sell-off on the stock market could actually end up being a good thing for the economy and the stock market in the long run. And listen to me, hear me out on this, because
I agree.
Bull market creates a fat that needs to end up being trimmed.
Yeah, correction. That's why we have corrections.
Yeah, you have corrections, you have mild recessions to trim the fat. Well, with this shock to the system that's causing it so quickly, if there's no long-term structural damage to the world economy by this virus, then what basically is happening here is the fat is being trimmed, which could set up the market and the economy for another bull run heading straight into the general election in November.
No, yeah, there's the political angle, right? The timing of it, and you can make a good argument there. My part's just the financial part of it when I'm looking, and I agree. I mean, corrections can probably, I mean, almost like let's pull things together. A correction can be like a vaccine against a crash.
Exactly. And I mean, this happened after 2001 with the 9/11 attacks. You know, the economy went into recession then went on a multi-year growth spurt that didn't stop until the 2008 financial crisis.
So this is you're saying this is a good thing.
It can be a good thing if there's no long-term structural damage to the world economy and the supply chain.
I agree. It also leaves opportunity for spendthrifts like me. Thank you for the call. Coming right back, we're going to talk about Anaya's Law. Remember, we've talked about Anaya's Law in the past, and Representative Chip Brown, who sponsored that legislation, is going to talk about what happened this week in Montgomery with that bill, and we'll probably talk some lotto, too. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this just gorgeous Friday. Nice. Dry, essentially dry through Monday. I don't know if we'll be able to get used to that. Clouds move in on Sunday, but no rain really appreciable until, I think, Tuesday. And that's good news for getting those rivers down. And unfortunately, the rain's going to return, so hopefully we can get a little bit of margin on those rivers before the rain comes back down from central and north Alabama. All right, I mentioned as we're kind of reviewing what happened this week in Montgomery, I know a lot of us were focused on the celebration and Mardi Gras and all that good stuff down here in southwest Alabama, but they were in session in Montgomery and checking out with Representative Chip Brown, who was there. Did they any kind of parades through the House of Representatives, anything like that, any throws, anything like that?
No, I... I wore a Mardi Gras tie.
Good, good.
On Tuesday, on Mardi Gras Day, and I did have some king cake.
Good.
One, actually, Representative Wes Kitchens from ARAB had, he was down for Mardi Gras this past weekend and brought a king cake back with him and brought that up to the House. And so he snuck me a piece. Didn't have enough for everybody, but being a Mardi Gras Mobilian kind of guy, He allowed me to have a piece.
Good deal. Good deal.
That was about as big of a celebration as we had.
Well, because I was thinking about the celebration that you must have felt like having upon passing of Anaya's Law and the enabling legislation. You've talked about Anaya's Law with us several times on the show. Talk about the vote and talk about what Anaya's Law does.
Well, I'll tell you what, John. It was a good day yesterday. Anaya Blanchard's family was in the gallery, and we had a lot of support. It was truly a team effort. The House leadership was behind it, and we were first and second on the calendar yesterday, and we had it was unanimous. That never really happens in the House, and it was truly a bipartisan effort to get this passed. And so they passed. One bill passed 104-0, and one passed 105-0.
That's awesome. So, I mean, that is awesome. I don't know that people realize. I mean, you mentioned it. It's beyond rare anymore in Montgomery. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Well, that's true. That is really true. And you know, what Anaya's Law is about is that it's bond reform. So what it does is currently under Alabama law, the only time you're truly only time a judge truly has the ability to deny bond is when you're charged with capital murder. And so what this does is it broadens that to include violent Class A felonies, rape, kidnapping, murder, violent domestic assault, first degree robbery, that sort of thing. And the way it would work, it's on an individual basis and not a blanket approach. So a district attorney could request a preliminary hearing, present evidence of why they think that you're an imminent threat to the community or a flight risk, and present evidence of that to the judge, and the judge could make a determination of whether to hold you without bond or grant you bond. And so it really, we had this gone over with constitutional attorneys that with a fine-tooth comb, and we're really on really solid constitutional grounds regarding the Eighth Amendment. So now we go to the Senate, and we see what happens in the Senate.
Let's talk about this too. That it does, you mentioned it, but I want to double down on this or go back. It doesn't require the judge to deny bond. It gives them the option. Am I saying it correctly?
That's right. That's right. And actually, even, you know, the wording in Alabama's Constitution regarding granting bond and denying bond to a person charged with capital murder doesn't mandate that they be held without bond, because it's unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment to mandate that someone be held without bond. And so this is done on a case-by-case basis, and I think that's the way to go. You're protecting individual liberties. People are innocent until proven guilty. And but there's certain individuals that are predisposed to violence that, you know, district attorneys know if this individual is released on bond and they go back out in the community that they're going to commit a serious crime. And right now, there's really no way to hold that individual without bond. And the reason it's named Anaya's Law is it's named after Anaya Blanchard, who was a young college student from Auburn. Well, she was going to Southern Union, but lived in Auburn. And she was kidnapped from a convenience store in Auburn and brutally killed. And the individual that is charged with her killing he was out on a $280,000 bond, but he, just a few months prior to that, had been charged with attempted murder, first degree robbery, a kidnapping of a 77-year-old man that they found him in the vehicle of this guy, and judge let him out. He had to let him out. And so he was out on bond, and then a couple months later, he committed the heinous crime of killing, or he's accused of killing Anaya Blanchard.
I mean, it's what he was out on bond for is exactly what he was charged in the Anaya Blanchard case with.
That's exactly right. And you know, I'm sick of that. I see that constantly, and so do other Alabamians, and, you know, enough is enough. So this is an opportunity to try to keep the people of our state safe. And it'll give judges the opportunity in those instances where they really believe that someone is a serious threat to the community if they were to be released. It'll give judges the ability to hold that individual.
So,
and I think it'll save lives.
And I think there's a lot of people agree with you, and it's amazing the votes you got in the House for this. You got to have done a little studying over in the Senate. What do you feel? You're going to have pretty good reception over there?
You know, I think so. We've done a lot of work. We've worked really hard. Senator David Sessions will be carrying the bill for us in the Senate. And I like our chances. I think that one thing, I think the unanimous vote in the House sends a message to the Senate of the fact that this is needed. And I've had conversations that I didn't have last year. You know, we passed this 92-3 last year out of the House, and there's the mood in the legislature this year is to really get this done. So I really like our chances in the Senate.
Let's talk about that. Then the next step, this becomes law. Let's say this becomes law. Governor signs off. Becomes law. You expecting a challenge here? I mean, you expect in the first case this comes up, you expect to be challenged in court?
Well, it would. Yeah, we do. I mean, you know, first it would go on the ballot in November, and it's a constitutional amendment. So the November election, the people of Alabama would vote on it, and then I would anticipate the ACLU or another civil liberties group will file a challenge against it. I mean, there's certain groups that anything dealing with prisons, sentencing, you know, bond, anything like that, they're going to file a lawsuit. That's what they do. And so I would anticipate we would get sued. And that's why when we did this yesterday, it was a team effort. I mean, we had a lot of people helping on this. Representative Matt Simpson played a critical role on this. He's a former prosecutor. Mike Jones, Rules Committee Chairman, who's also an attorney and Attorney General's office. Several other people played critical roles.
Hey, and Chip, we're getting a lot of wind noise in the phone, too. It's kind of hard to hear. So yeah.
Sorry about that. You got me now?
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. We really look to, it's one thing to just pass a bill, but it's another thing to make sure that when we pass that bill and it's enacted into law, that it upholds any constitutional challenge.
Right.
And I really do feel like we're on solid constitutional grounds here, that we're it will be able to survive any challenge. And actually, too, a lot of the language in the bill comes from federal law, current federal law. They do this in federal courts all the time, and so that's one of the things that we did was we knew that that's constitutional, so we decided to go that angle with it.
Good deal. Well, congratulations on the vote in the House, and best of luck on the vote in the Senate. I think you're going to do quite well.
Well, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that.
I want to shift gears here for a second, and we're close to the break, so I'll just kind of lay out the question, then we'll have to come back and talk about it. But the overarching question is, where do we stand with lotto legislation, and how does, at least in your opinion and other House members, how does it affect you one way or another that the governor has a study commission taking place?
Well, I think that we are closer on the lottery. I think that we're in the stage right now. Representative Steve Klaus, who's the general fund chairman, sponsored a bill this year and has, you know, quite a few co-sponsors. I'm one of the co-sponsors of the legislation, and I think that the fact that the governor created the study commission, I think, is unfortunate, to be honest with you. I think clouds the issue. I understand it on the compact, but on the lottery, I mean, what do we need to study on the lottery? The lottery's been around for years and years, and people around here have been playing the lottery in Florida since the 80s, and now in Mississippi, Louisiana, and you play it in every surrounding state, Tennessee, Georgia. So I think they're in the process right now of looking to make sure that the votes are there to really move forward with it. You know, a constitutional amendment, we don't need the signature of the governor, so that is one way to kind of look at it from a different point of view.
Let's do this. Up against the break here, going to come right back and talk a little bit more about this, because you hear what Representative Brown's saying, that the lumping together of the compact and the lotto bill doesn't have to be that way. There's an argument to be made against it, and we'll have that discussion when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk, 106.5, and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this beautiful Friday, and continue our conversation with Chip Brown, District 105 Representative, and talk about, number one, the unanimous passing of two bills of Anaya's Law in the House, and it's going to the Senate now. And then we got in a little conversation about lottery, and I got to tell you, I know you hear it from your constituents. If I ask people what they're concerned with, what's going on in session, it seems like lotto is in the top three of everybody's list.
Well, it is. That is the number one issue I get asked about every week.
Wow.
Why don't we have a lottery? I mean, it's almost like that kind of thought. You know, very often you'll see a stat and you'll say, "What? Alabama's one of three states that doesn't do this, or we're one of four states, whatever." And lottery is like that. It's almost, I just want the people to have
it's
an
a
opportunity
vote.
To vote.
There
on
you go. There
that's
you go.
It. I mean, it voted up or down, but let's settle the argument and do it. You know, let's move on.
And for people who haven't been following this, that's exactly, I mean, what we're talking about. It's going to be a constitutional amendment that you get to vote on. The legislature is not going to pass a bill, and also we have a lottery. You're going to move legislation to where we can vote on this.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you can't. A good example of that, Sean, I actually have a bill that would allow, currently under Alabama law, antiques dealers and people that collect antiques, they can't buy pre 1960 slot machines for their house, for their man cave, that sort of thing. Just individual use. That's wild that you couldn't do that. But in order to do that, you have to amend the Constitution because it deals with gaming. And so the lottery, we have to have a constitutional amendment. We cannot just go in and randomly do that. And I think that's good. You know, that's such a such an important issue, let the people vote on it.
Okay. So now the governor comes out, you know, back at her State of the State address and says, well, she's going to commission a group and the folks from right here in South Alabama on it as well to look into the lottery and then the compact. And listen, I think there's a fair argument to be said here. Let's look into the compact, this newest offer from the Porch Banded Creek Indians, because even though they've offered compacts before, this is somewhat new. But why is it tied at the hip with Lotto? Does it have to be that way?
I don't. I would think on the surface that it appears that way. And I was actually in the old House chambers that night when the governor said that, and several of us kind of looked around at each other and cringed because we said that. Why are we studying the lottery? I mean, that, you know, every year multiple lottery bills are brought on the floor, and you want to study it. There's volumes and volumes and volumes of information concerning the lottery. Now, the compact is a much more complex issue and a unique issue.
Right.
So I understand that. I understand the need to really study that and look at the numbers and look at the monopoly issue, and I totally understand that. But I think the lottery could be separated from the compact and should be separated.
As a duly elected representative, you're saying that's what I want to hear, that they do not have to be joined.
That's my opinion. That's, you know, I'm one of 105 in the House, so. But I will say I'm not the only one that has that opinion.
Well, I've been hearing.
There's quite a few of us that feel the same way.
Yeah, and it's good to hear that because, I mean, just as kind of outsider looking in, I felt the same thing. And then to hear you and other members of the House and members of the Senate saying the same exact thing, I think it's worth people realizing that, because if you just listen to, I don't know, what you're told by or what you may deduct from what the governor said, you think they're the same issue, but they are not the same issue.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, you know, they both concern gaming, but they're two totally separate and unique issues. I mean, the lottery, we understand that issue. It's what it is. It's the lottery. We can anticipate how much revenue we would get off of the lottery, you know, look out at other states and how it's projected out over 10 years, 20 years. If we participate in this game, that game, what it would cost us to participate, what our cut would be, that sort of thing. Totally, that's easy to figure out. But the compact is a much more complex issue. What are the real numbers? That sort of thing. And so I understand studying that. I actually think that move, in my opinion, by the governor is a very good idea. I do. I like that. But the lottery side, I don't understand why they were lumped together, and I think they could be separated.
And,
I definitely do.
And it sounds like, from what you're saying, I've talked to other members of the House and said it, that y'all would move forward with the Klaus bill or others and move this forward, even though the governor says we're studying it.
That's my thought, and that's my hope. I think that's, and I know that's shared by other members of the House as well, that we would go ahead and move forward with the lottery and then allow the governor to have the study commission to study the compact issue.
Okay. Is that something that you see? Is it a next week? Is it an end of session? What's your best vibe on that right now?
Well, I don't think that we could go too long. You know, there's certain issues that you can get through on a very short time frame. But the lottery is one of those issues that I think takes several weeks to work on, get through committee, that sort of thing. One of the major issues that we had last year that I think is going to be overcome this year is the direction of the money, that the revenue that's generated by the lottery. This year, Steve Klaus's bill puts that into education, into pre-K, and then to the scholarships. So that side is different than last year. That was one of the major hang-ups. She had multiple bills, and this year we're not seeing that. So I think that's there's a possibility that this one bill that is seen as what people call a clean lotto bill would have an easier time getting through. So with that said, I would say the next few weeks. I mean, and we'll see.
And for people to understand quickly, when you say clean lotto bill, what does that mean?
Strictly involving the lottery. Has nothing to do with casino gaming. Doesn't deal with video poker, any other issues. Strictly deals with, you know, scratch-offs, Powerball, Mega Millions, those sorts of games.
All right. Very good.
Which I think that gets into the separating of the issues between the compact and that type of gaming versus the lottery.
Very good. All right. We're going to pick this up next week. Check back with you after another week in Montgomery. Representative Chip Brown, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Good to talk to the rep. And after what a thing to have a Nia's Law. Unanimous votes in the House. Two different bills part of that. It really something in today's world. All right. Coming right back to wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5's Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, and Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5, and my buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino back in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Sean. Good to see you again, buddy.
It's good to see you as well, and I know you're like crazy busy representing so many of the veterans out there in the 3M earplug case. I got to believe that many, if not all of our veterans, are aware of this by now, but I would imagine 100% of the veterans that served would want to know if they have a case. That's probably what's going through people's minds.
We are. We're very busy representing veterans, and we're signing a lot of veterans up. But I do think that there are a lot of veterans out there that are holding back and just hesitant to join this case. And I want to communicate to them that they should at least give us a call and get some information about whether they qualify and whether they should join this action, because I can give them that information.
As a Marine, as a veteran, help me understand, what would hold them back? Why would a vet not have called?
Well, I think we've talked about this before, but certainly the mindset of our troops and the reason why, you know, we are so strong militarily in this country is because we don't produce a bunch of whiners in our military.
Right.
You know, we have guys that tough it out, and ladies, and that's what the training is. I mean, the core of the training is to endure difficult things through all circumstances, and the military does that really well, and that continues on for the rest of their life. And so even to this day, when I go to a doctor, I sometimes feel a little guilty about saying, okay, yeah, my back hurts or whatever, because of the training that I had 30 years ago. So that's one of the reasons. And the other reason is just some of the misconceptions out there about this case.
Now, you and I were talking, and help explain this to me, because I don't have the insight you do. The vets can get disability for hearing loss and tinnitus, even with a 0% rating, or they don't have a rating. What does rating mean? How does that work for a civilian like me? What do you talk about?
So this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Thanks for asking it. So a veteran can have a permanent injury and then get rated through the VA for that permanent injury. And that can be for a number of things. Hearing loss and tinnitus are two of those things. And those are the same injuries that we're dealing with in this case. I have a lot of veterans that come to me that don't have a hearing rating or a tinnitus rating, meaning that the VA says, well, you may have an injury, but we're going to assign you a zero rating. And then I go and I look at their records, their audiograms, and they definitely have a hearing loss and they definitely have tinnitus. So what I'm finding is that the VA's rating system is flawed. So we don't go by what the VA says in their labels. We take an independent look at the audiograms, all the medical records, when determining if you have a claim.
Okay, you explained this before, but this is key to it, because there is a benchmark here. I understand this. There's a benchmark for people's hearing when they go into the military, and you have that audiogram to compare it to.
So another cool thing about this case, yes, is the science that goes into determining the case and analyzing the case and the evidence that we have. So when you go into the military, you get poked, prodded, and and touched everywhere, and hearing tests, eye tests, all that. So yeah, we know what your hearing's like going into the military, and then you know we can track the earplugs that you received. We can track the types of exposure that you were exposed to. And the interesting thing too is that the military studies all of the sounds that come from machinery and weapons and all that. And I've got charts and charts that show how loud everything is. So interestingly, for instance, the most common type of weapon, it would be the 5.56 weapon. When I was around, it was the M16A2. Nowadays it'd be more the M4, but it's your 5.56 weapon. Mm-hmm. That has 156 decibels. Okay,
you got a chart with this on. You know the decibels.
I know the decibels.
The report from the rifle.
A Humvee is very unlike the Hummer you get down the road at the dealership.
Okay,
Humvee in the military is 88 decibels. To gauge that, that's about as loud as a smoke alarm going off about 5 feet from your ear. So that thing...
Yes. The engine and the machine. Wow.
I don't think McConnell or whoever sells those suckers would sell many Humvees from the military if they were this loud, but that can damage your hearing. So you've got constant noise, and then you've got the intermittent noises, you know, like shooting. So for intermittent noises like shooting, the human ear, average human ear, can sustain 140 decibels for 28 seconds. So you need that earplug to bring that decibel down below 140.
Because you said it's 156.
156. Now, these earplugs, the maximum they're going to bring them down, the decibel level that is 11 decibels. So if you're wearing these earplugs and you're shooting an M16, if you're an average person, you know, according to scientific studies, you will suffer permanent hearing loss, okay? And everyone in the military has to go through rifle qualification and basic training and once a year. So just that alone, if you're in a Humvee and you're wearing these earplugs, you're going to be right at the threshold of having a hearing loss, because the constant noise, you can sustain 80 decibels for 8 hours a day. So you need to bring that down. If you're going to have 8 hours a day of a sound, you need to bring that down below 80. So if you're in a Black Hawk helicopter, mm-hmm. that's 108 decibels, I believe. So you need to bring that down to 80. So you need around 20-something or 30 decibels of reduction. 11.
You just told me that these earplugs, 11 decibels. That's it.
Literally.
They missed the mark on all three here.
Yeah. I mean, our troops would have been better off literally getting, you know, wax from a candle and sticking it in their ear than wearing these earplugs. I mean, these things should have been thrown in the trash, and 3M should have just gone by their merry way and say, hey, I'll take my $10 billion I'm making on everything else, but I'm not going to risk the troops. That didn't happen. They pushed these earplugs to the government, to the military, like they were the best thing since sliced bread, the latest and greatest, and they were the latest and the worst.
Misses the mark on all these examples. Okay, if you mentioned disability, if a veteran is already on disability, does this lawsuit have any effect on those disability claims?
Great question. Another big issue with veterans is, okay, I'm receiving disability payments right now for my hearing loss or tinnitus, and that's a sure thing. It's not going away. I don't want to risk that by getting into some lawsuit for an injury that happened when I was in the military. This has been researched and studied, and it is a fact that if you have service-related disability payments, you know, because of, you know, the sound that hurts your ears, suffering hearing loss or tinnitus, this lawsuit, any settlement in this lawsuit will not affect any payments that you're going to get from your disability.
That's probably a question a lot of people have.
Yeah, I added that to my contract. I put a line in there saying, I want you to be assured that, you know, we will not enter a settlement that would affect your service-related disability payments, because I just want to make sure that the veterans that I'm representing are comforted and know that that is a fact, and they can trust, you know, the actual contract. But it is a fact. This is not going to affect your service-related disability payments if you enter this lawsuit.
All right. When one of the veterans picks up the phone to contact you, you're a Marine. They can speak to you as a Marine, that means a lot. I mean, y'all speak a language that civilians don't speak.
Well, it's just a fact, because when you've been through that, any branch of the military, it changes your mindset. And so there is sort of a hidden communication, almost like a secret handshake that people in the military have with other people in the military. Part of it may be a bluntness. You know, if you're in the military and been in there, you are usually blunt speaking, and you like people to speak blunt to you as well. And I'm blunt. I am. I'm a blunt lawyer. I mean, I love my clients, but I tell them things straight up. Sometimes I try to soften it, but certainly with the military guys, I can kind of get into my mold, and they like that blunt mentality that
speak
I have.
Veteran to veteran with them.
Talk your talk, I walk your walk. That's right.
All right. So let's say this. Somebody who has heard us talk in the past but hadn't contacted you. Once again, tell them, I mean, you've laid out these things that might have been some kind of headwind for them. There's no reason for them not at least to call and find out, right? I mean, if they have questions, you're going to answer that.
Right. People in the military are holding back or saying, you know, for whatever reason. It could be one of the reasons I discussed or any other reason why they think this is going to be a waste of time, this and that, whatever. But what's wrong with calling up a veteran like myself, someone that served in the Marines, and talking to me and just getting literally free advice? So you can just call me up and get free advice. And if you don't like how it sounds after that, then at least you've been informed. And everybody should be informed about this, because if you've served your country and you have a permanent hearing loss or tinnitus, you deserve to be in this lawsuit. And it protects veterans and people that serve in the military going down the road, because we got to make sure that companies don't intentionally market dangerous safety devices, knowing it's more likely than not going to hurt those troops. They need to be punished, and that's what we're here to do. So I need veterans to join in this case.
All right, get them the message now, so lest somebody tries this in the future with our fighting men and women. As always, I appreciate the info, Ed, and thanks for being part of the show.
Thanks, Sean, as always.
You can reach Ed Rowan at Taylor Martino Law Firm online, taylormartino.com. That's taylormartino.com. No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.